Welcome back to another episode of the New Adventures of the Mountain Pass podcast. This is your host, as always, TJ Martinell, coming to you from my war room in my fortress Americana in the heart of Cascadia. The date is April 27th, I think. Yeah, Saturday. It's morning. I got my coffee. The weather. You're going to hear, this is going to be a shock. It is wet, rainy, and cold outside here in the Pacific Northwest, and it's about May. And we wonder why people move to other states. I can understand why some people decide to stay in California. Because you do have to deal with all the taxes and all the other insanities that go on in that state. But at least you see the sunshine. Here, we've got similar stuff. We've got the similar taxes. We have the similar insanities. But we don't have the sun. At least in my part of the state. Of course, I'm checking the weather over in Central Washington thinking, you know, do I need to throw despite the fact that gas is almost $5 a gallon here, do I want to just get in the car and drive and just to be able to see the sun? Now, somebody might say, well, why don't you just go to one of those red light therapy places like they got in town? Because it's not real. And this is actually going to be the topic of this episode. This is the everything is fake episode. And yes, it's been a while since my last podcast. I've been busy. Been busy working on the house, getting stuff done in the basement. For those of you who are new to this podcast, I've been working on taking an unfinished basement and turning it into a living space. And it's been definitely a good learning experience. So I feel like that is a little bit more of a productive use of my time than to be doing whatever else it is people do, scrolling on their social media feeds. I really need to take a break from social media. It's been very informative to watch all this stuff. I find it fascinating. I feel like a anthropologist observing strange alien species in the wild. So here's what we're going to talk about. As people might have noticed, there's quite a few transgender people around. And you might also have noticed that there weren't a whole lot of them about 12 years ago. And they certainly weren't out in public. And what's also fascinating is you have these people that claim to be traditional or claim to be conservative. They claim to have all these different traditional values, and it's not like they agree with the transgendered movement. It's that their reaction to it is very tepid. And this isn't just the trad... At some point, there's going to be a trans trad movement. I'm a traditional tran. We laugh because it's funny, but we laugh because it's true. You know, I'm a traditionalist. There are only 32 flavors of gender, not 108 like those radicals. And you're wondering what you might be wondering, what do you mean by a tepid response? Well, this is, I, for lack of a better term, I call it my Voight-Kampff test in real life. You know, the movie Blade Runner, where they had the Voight-Kampff test to determine whether somebody was a replicant or a human. My Voight-Kampff tests are ways of gauging reality. Like, what is actually real? And a Voight-Kampff test in this regard is, what causes somebody to go into genuine rage, anger, and outrage? A man claiming to be a woman, it upsets some people, but it doesn't upset them on a... We're going to be slightly cynical here, ladies and gentlemen, so strap your seatbelts in. We're gonna venture a little bit into the world of unpleasantries and, dare I say it, discomfort. There is that one gal, Riley Gaines, or whatever her name was, who's around, and she's championing the whole women keeping the men out of women's sports, right? She's not doing this, guys. Let's call it what it is. She is not doing this out of some moral crusade. She's doing it because it affected her. And the reason it has roused the anger of a lot of people is because it's depriving their precious little princesses, and this is not, and I'm not saying that in a negative sense, but it is directly affecting their daughter's future, their futures, like someone who might have, a girl who might have gotten a scholarship for to go play women's sports. Now some dude has taken it from her. I mean, this is where it's finally dawning on them. I wasn't even thinking about this now, but this is an interesting concept here. You have them getting angry at men outcompeting their daughters for the same prize. Yet that is exactly what they've done by sending women into the workforce. They are now competing with men for the same jobs. And so my response to that is, now you know what it's like where the competition is beating your daughter. And easily so. I mean, if this transgendered movement doesn't have some sort of reversal, you're going to see women's sports completely destroyed. Because let's say that you're a talented young woman. You are not going to waste your time pursuing the scholarship when you know that some guy who has put basically hardly any effort, you know, the amount of discipline, because I've interviewed enough high school student athletes, the amount of discipline and restraint and dedication they have to put into these things, it is not trivial, guys. It is very, 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 I would say, it requires a level of self-discipline and drive. And to have that all taken away from by somebody who all they had to do was identify as your gender. Because guess what, guys? We are dealing with reality. And the reality biologically is that men are naturally stronger than women. A woman can, and yes, somebody's gonna say, well, what about this girl? It's like, yes, I personally know a girl who can outlift most men that I know. That is not the point. This person is also basically the athletic equivalent. She treats working out the way a monk treats religion. This is like her religion. So no, the average girl is not going to be lifting and eating and dieting and doing all this stuff the same way that this girl did. It does. If you are an average, it's like when what was it, JV or sophomore boys soccer high school team just crushed the women's US soccer team, the one with that purple-haired weirdo on it. I mean, they got crushed. But it's biological. This is where biological reality, or just reality itself, is intruding on someone in a way that impacts them negatively. In other words, they don't have much of a reaction to people pretending to be something or saying something is what it is not, as long as it doesn't affect them. Again, this goes back to the Voight-Kampff test thing that I talk about, where people care, you can tell what people care about or where they have a genuine moral value in what outrages them and what makes them angry. And you can tell when someone identifies with somebody in a way when their condemnation, rebuke, criticism is blunted, where they give a very subtle or restrained response rhetorically. In contrast, if somebody were to, I'm trying to think of, you know, there's all these the Palestinian protests that are going on in universities. What if this was some group that was like a, I'm trying to think of a contrast. It's kind of blanking on me because the easiest one to go to is to say if it was a bunch of skinheads, you know, what would be the response of that? But I really, honestly, I don't have an equivalent. But imagine with the Palestinian protests where there's people who are trying to give nuanced arguments about, I'll give a better example. They're blocking the highway, right? And somebody is kind of defending, well, you know, they're fighting for a good cause. Well, if you put somebody who was fighting for a cause you didn't like and you opposed and they were blocking the highways, the response would clearly be different. They need to be removed. They're domestic terrorists, all that other stuff. My philosophy, because I like to think I have a moral code, is anyone who blocks the highway needs to, like, it should be legal for someone to run someone over who is deliberately blocking the highway. That is a public safety issue, and you can shut down critical traffic flow, especially if there's if it's between emergency responders and an emergency. Just if you want to die, stand in the middle of the highway. Okay, so why are people being tempered in their reaction to, say, the transgender movement, which is where a man claims that he's a woman and a woman claims that she's a man, and everybody is just expected to accept this. And then it started out, well, let them say that, let them use their own pronouns. And now it's gotten to the point where they're saying, you have to use my pronouns that I give you. You need to speak words that I put into your mouth. And people's response again to that is not very, you know, it's like, I'm sorry, you don't get to tell me what I get to say, right? If you get to decide what you are, I get to decide what you are in my own mind. What's going on here is the transgender movement is just the latest movement, and I'm not talking in a collective sense, this is in a political social thing. It is the latest phenomenon where people say something is something that it is not. People can argue about whether they believe literally in witchcraft and wizardry and sorcery. I believe in them in a practical, perhaps secular, maybe not a secular sense, but witchcraft, wizardry, and sorcery is about taking something that isn't and make it something that you want it to be. It's about taking something that is and making it something else. And the way you do that rhetorically is by using a word to describe another word. It is like the letter A. Its name is A. But if you call it B, it is still A. But if you keep calling it A, everybody's just going to internalize this idea that A is B. And so you enter a world where the letter A is called B. Its essence hasn't changed, but the way people describe it is different. And if you're a person who thinks that A is A, you are going to be encountering people where there is going to be a fight over a perception of reality. And this, I actually wrote a short story novella that's going to be published in an anthology. Hopefully, Vince, get on it. Don't fail me now. Come on, handle, buddy. Don't fail me now. it's set in a very remote, desolate planet where it's this small mining colony settlement where they're constantly being attacked by this hostile alien race. They are very much in a perpetual survival mode. They have, for their own security and safety, they have different rules. One of the rules is it is illegal for someone to deliberately misuse a word from its proper context. Meaning, if you say something's dangerous, which is the example I give in the novella, somebody uses the word dangerous to describe something in a way that was contextually inappropriate because that's not the correct word to use. And so he's publicly flogged in front of everyone, in front of the entire community for misusing this word. And the reason is because communication is like the key to interaction. If for those of you who are biblically inclined, the story of the Tower of Babel, where humanity was spoke one language and they were going to build this massive tower, and God goes down and confuses the language. And I think I've probably mentioned this on another podcast. Here is a very interesting, for those of you who literally believe this happened, what if he didn't change the language? He just caused people to have different definitions of the same words. And of course, what happens, regardless of whether that happened, the people scatter based on what language they spoke, because that's how important communication is. If you cannot communicate with other people, you divide a people. They can't even function. They can't work together on stuff. So we have to maintain this delusion over rhetoric, this modern sorcery, because if we actually stuck to our definitions, our civilization would collapse. This is not, I'm not being inflammatory. I'm saying because people would just stop interacting with someone because they are stuck in a world where something is reality that it's not. But here's the kicker. This is the point of my podcast. People are doing this all the time, sometimes at large, collectively, and sometimes in their own private affairs, where they use words to describe something that means something else. They may not even be aware of it, or typically that they are aware of it. They are aware that they are saying something, but meaning something else. They are using a word, but what they're communicating is something else, and they're doing it deliberately to confuse someone and to control them. But typically, they're doing it to avoid an obstacle or to gain an advantage. It's like somebody who makes a food that, you know, like organically grown, and the definition's changed. Where people change, that's another example of modern witchcraft, wizardry, sorcery, whatever word you want to use, where they change the definition of a word, kind of like how they change the definition of a vaccine. And I get over time words change their definitions or meanings based on context, or just the word doesn't have the same applicability. But this is where people have to be. I'll give an example politically. When people read the Second Amendment, it says a well-regulated militia. It's not talking about this is an example of failed witchcraft. It's where somebody says, oh, it says a well-regulated militia. That means the government needs to regulate it. Which is why it says the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed, you disingenuous hack. That doesn't make any sense, and you know it. This is an example. Again, they are intentionally trying to argue something that the very sentence they are reading it from contradicts them in the latter half of it. Because well-regulated within the historical context, the people who wrote that, they were saying, we need militia that are well-trained, well-disciplined, and well-organized, because this is the bulk and the backbone of our military force. This is at a time where they didn't have a standing army or a permanent army, for the most part. Militia were used to maintain civil order. They were called up to suppress domestic insurrections and rebellions. So yes, you need a militia that isn't a bunch of farmers who've never held a gun before. And I actually have done a whole bunch of articles for the 10th Amendment Center where I talk about, I go back with all these different words and say, what did arms mean historically at the time this was written? Did it mean that certain weapons, you know, and when it says keep and bear arms, what does it mean to bear arms? What does infringe mean? Like, at the time, what did this word mean? So what are they effectively communicating? Well, it's pretty obvious to someone who's honest and lives in reality. They wrote this amendment to keep the federal government from having any authority to regulate firearms. That was to be left to the states, and many states like mine passed even more explicit right to keep and bear arms, saying it was, you know, for instead of the right of people, it's the right of individual citizens in my state. Yet, crazily enough, shockingly enough, we have gun control laws in our state. Because when a judicial body reinterprets things, they're engaging in legal witchcraft. But it's no different than the trans movement of men claiming to be women and women claiming to be men. They are changing the definition of something and arguing that what it means now is what it meant back then. This is why I've actually bought a whole bunch of old dictionaries, because it's fascinating to see how they define something back then. But here's the other crazy one, is the words that didn't even exist, which meant the concept didn't exist. So something that people claim is real didn't exist then because it was fake, or it never existed at all. I'll give a more innocuous example. It's when a beer company, you know, you see on the back of a beer, it says, oh, small craft brewery, small craft association. I was talking to a small brewery owner, and they said, yeah, they changed the definition. It's a big company that bought out a bunch of smaller companies, and they've arranged it so it seems like they're all small, but they're all owned by the same company. This is an example of something being fake. It's fake to say that they're a small brewery, not the owner I was talking to, but he, you know, he has to compete with them. And of course, they want to regulate things so it benefits them while being able to keep the small brewery label. Yeah, that's an example of a non-sexual, non-biological, transgendered, the same dynamic at play. You are changing something but keeping the label, and that's the inverse, as opposed to not changing anything, not in its essence, but just changing its name. So I'll do a religious one where somebody claims that you put up a building and you say it's a church, right? And then you later decide, you know what, I'm not going to call it a church. I'm just going to call it an association. You've changed nothing in the building. And nothing in the building as far as furnishings or what goes on in the building as far as activities. It's all the same, but you change the name. Has anything in its essence been changed? Well, then what is you are starting to see what I mean. People, it's like a church I knew where they used to have the word Baptist in it and they got rid of the Baptist label. Nothing changed in the church. It was still a Baptist church. They just took the name out. And that's an example. And that was done, by the way, for marketing reasons. Because they felt like they would get more people to attend their church if they removed the word Baptist in it. So they weren't in, I mean, this is being a little cynical. They were not trying to change, either they were changing things and didn't want, how do I put this? They were trying to, now some person might argue, well, be fair, saying, hey, they're trying to be more accurate. They used to be very Baptist, but they, you know, there's still some old guard left that's, you know, still thinks that dancing is a sin and that you shouldn't drink, but their views aren't very prevalent anymore. They still influence some of the culture, but we're not really Baptist anymore. And that might be, that can be an example. Again, it's about the reality matching what it is versus what you call it. That might have been an acknowledgement of we are no longer really a Baptist church, but that's not really what I was told when I asked why they changed it, because they didn't put in another denomination to describe themselves. But what you call something, it's interesting how what people call themselves is not what other people call them. And this is something I've learned recently. Members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints do not call themselves Mormons, even though the book that their religion is based off of is the Book of Mormon. They call themselves members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Most people who are out the Gentiles, not non-Mormons, they call them Mormons. Puritans did not call themselves Puritans. They called themselves, they had different words. My ancestors were they weren't Puritans. They called themselves Brownists because Brown was the name of the leader of the movement. They were, you know, separatists, nonconformists, whatever word you want to use, but they didn't, you know, Calvinists don't call themselves Calvinists anymore. They call themselves Reformed. So there's this, it's a fight over people's, how people perceive you versus how you perceive yourself. And the question is, how accurate is that? How accurate is what you convey about what you're about? So if a church is claiming to be a church, but it's more run like a community center or a country club or a social club, at what point does it stop being a church? Or you have, I mean, for example, you have these old cathedrals where they've turned them into co or churches where they've turned them into coffee shops. There's even one that's a brewery. There's a church in Leavenworth, Washington. It was an old Catholic church, very iconic. Had the basilica or whatever it is, that the spiry dome, the whatever, whatever. Nice to architecture. They turned it into the extension of an existing hotel. So, is it still a church? They would probably say, someone would, say it is a former church building or chapel that's been converted. So it's an example of where you change the essence of something without changing its exterior. And that's more of a practical, there's nothing necessarily. The more controversial thing is, should a ch old church building be used for other purposes, specifically for secular purposes? But where we're getting into the fake part is where there are things that you can't change, but you pretend like they are capable of changing. And so you pretend something's changed that can never change, or that something didn't change that has, and you still refer to it. Here's a one other example. How many people who have a marriage certificate license from the state are not married in any meaningful sense? This isn't sarcasm or cynicism. This is me knowing about numerous examples of where, practically speaking, I would not consider them to be, if the piece of paper was taken away, you would not consider them to be married. I mean, this is an interesting concept that came up during the whole debate over my marriage equality. Is I just said, look, if you need a piece of paper from the government to say that you're married, I don't know what to tell you. If I get married and the government, first of all, and I don't get a piece of paper, am I considered married? At what point is a person considered married? Do I need someone else's? If I don't need anybody else's permit, they say, it's nobody's business, or nobody should be able to tell us no. Well, the government, apparently, because it's called the license. You have to turn it into the county auditor. Like, what is the purpose of a marriage license? I mean, if you go back through history, of marriage licenses, there was the reasons there are to ensure that only government-approved people could get married. So, this is just where I brought it up. I go, look, if your identity, if the essence, it's like if the government burned or destroyed or altered my home, the documents that show that I own my house, that the property belongs to me, they destroyed the piece of paper. It doesn't change the fact that it's my property. Another one was interesting I brought up years ago is I said, look, if someone destroyed the Declaration of Independence, are we back with England? No, because the piece of paper did not m make us independent of Great Britain. Neither did the Treaty of Paris, I believe it was. Treaty of Ghent was War of 1812. Those treaties acknowledged reality. It actually reminded me of a famous interaction between John Adams when he was the ambassador to England and he meets King George III for the first time. And King George says, I'm going to be frank. I was the last to agree to independence of the colonies, but the independence has been secured. I'm going to engage in diplomatic relations with you in a cordial manner. This was, for all of his faults as a king, this was an example of a king acknowledging reality on both paper and just what was real. He wasn't going to sit there and, even though he later went mad, which is interesting, he wasn't living in this delusional world at that point that America was still with England. But the Peace of Papers did not make America independent. Us beating the British in military combat is what made us independent. And it goes back to the Second Amendment. If you destroyed the Bill of Rights, the actual Bill of Rights piece of paper, do we lose those rights? No, because our, from my political philosophy, our rights don't come from pieces of paper. People can argue that it's a natural right or that it's a it comes our rights come from God. I think in a practical sense, our rights come from our ability to successfully exert, to exercise those rights. If you have the right to live, it's like what in the book Starship Troopers, Heinlein's character is talking about natural rights. And he goes, well, what if a guy's in the desert and he can't get water? He has a right to live, but he's going to die anyways. That's a different way of looking at it. But the whole point, it goes back to the marriage stuff. This is another example of where people are pretending something is that isn't. Like marriage, there is a concept of marriage, and what many people think of as a marriage, I would not consider to be the real concept of marriage. And I'm not, t this isn't talking about stuff that's gone on over the last 12 years. I'm talking about stuff that's been going on for a long time, that is considered a part of what is deemed marriage, that to me is not. It just isn't. But we've, as a society, we had to accept this stuff because our civilization, it goes back to what I was saying, our civilization would have collapsed. We would have had a Tower of Babel moment and everybody would have just gone their own separate ways. I mean, this is going to be an interesting thing when people talk about, a national divorce or secession or independence and fractionalization and balkanization of the United States. That is going to be interesting because we're witnessing this, where we have groups of people that live in completely different realities, and there's a fight over whether over asserting that perception of reality over other people. I mean, when you have states like mine obsessing over what goes on in other states regarding abortion or, removing kids' genitals, you're seeing them trying to push and assert their perception of reality onto other people 1,000 miles away. Because if they don't, that fractionalization, that balkanization will occur. It will get to the point where people will just stop. They will cease treating each other like they're part of the same group of people, the same society, the same culture, the same country. But okay, let's go to the big question is, what exactly is the United States of America right now? I mean, there's that famous line from Killing Them Softly where Brad Pitt's at the very end and he's watching Obama get his inaugural or his victory speech after the election, and he says what I think is this very fu historically inaccurate but still funny, where he goes, this guy wants to tell me we're living in a community. Don't make me laugh. I live in America. In America, you're on your own. America's not a country. It's just a business. Very cynical, but he's making he's tr claiming that that is what America actually is. Not a country, just a business. And is it a country or an empire? Is it a one? Is it, the like the Declaration of Independence says, is it one nation or is it many different nations within the same political jurisdiction? I'll throw out another one at random. What is it, what does an education mean? Do you think that what Thomas Jefferson thought was an education for his daughter is the same education that a Washington state lawmaker is thinking about as an education? They're using the exact same words, but I promise you, and I don't think anybody's going to argue with me on this, they do not mean the same thing. So when they say somebody's educated, you're thinking, oh, this person's intelligent, they're well-read, they know all this stuff. That what they really mean is they know all about random weird sex stuff by age 12. So this is where this is a I just a I, this is a enlightening, illuminating, eye-opening opportunity for people to say, how many things that we that are called something are actually not what they are? How many things are something, but we won't call it what it is? And this is where you see this. There's a big word to describe it, but the use of many words to describe a simple concept, it's a way of avoiding a description. I mean, if you want to know what that looks like, go cover politics with the amount of just word salad to avoid directly describing something. Like when they use the word equity and inclusion, what do they actually mean? When they say we want equality or something like that, what does that mean? And then describe what that actually means. You see the same legislatively, you see the same trans concept with, I'll give the big example, the Patriot Act. Oh, this is a patriotic bill. If you don't support this bill, you're unpatriotic. You're un-American. Having the acronym be the Patriot Act, it absolutely was conveying the sense that it was about being, it was a, the essence of the bill was patriotic. Instead, they should have called it the Big Brother Bill or Big Brother Act. Or the killing civil the Death of Civil Rights Act. So again, this is just one of many examples of calling something that which it is not. And just because you call it something does not make it what it is. I think, I can't remember, I think it was Abe Lincoln, possibly apocryphal, but he said, if you have a dog that has four legs and you call its tail a leg, how many legs does the dog have? Four, because calling a tail a leg doesn't make it a leg. Kind of like how calling a income tax a excise tax doesn't make it an excise tax. It's still an income tax. It's a tax on income. But Washington State here, because they call it an excise tax, they consider it an excise tax. But this is another example of political trans, not transgenderism, trans legislation, where you are calling something that it's not and treating it like it's something that it isn't. Because the reason they're doing that is because it's a progressive income tax and those are unconstitutional in Washington State. That is how they got around 80 years of Supreme Court rulings. That's how they got around voters rejecting a progressive income tax numerous times, is they just decided to play the trans legislative game. We're going to call it something that it's not. And the judicial body went along with it. The same way that whatever governing bodies of these collegiate sports decided that we're going to allow these men to compete in women's sports. And unfortunately, many taxpayers, and I'm not one to judge because I don't know what the full consequences are, but many taxpayers have paid the capital gains income tax as an excise tax. If I was owed the tax, I would not pay it. I would say, no, this is an income tax, and this is unconstitutional in the state. And the Supreme Court doesn't get to decide whether something is or isn't in that sense. This is a tax on income. I'm not legally obligated to pay this income tax. I get that's easy for me to say because I don't owe it, but that's what it means is I'm never going to put myself in a position where I owe this tax because I will not pay it on principle. But this is why you're seeing the transgender movement have so much powers because its moral basis is the same basis many people use for other activities or behaviors or institutions or associations. They see and identify in a very subconscious way similar behavior that they themselves commit. And that's why those who are the more you see someone pushing this movement, the more you know that they themselves engage in this behavior in some way in their own lives, in whatever capacity it is. They're championing their own moral cause in a separate way. So I think that's all I got for this episode. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Mountain Pass Podcast. This is your host, TJ Martinell, coming to you from my war room in my Fortress Americana in the heart of Cascadia, signing off.